From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's July 14, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the RFA went to Japan last week to make the case for ethanol with the G8. And the pork producer and the corn grower, they should just get along. We'll have more on these news stories shortly. In just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll hear a cautionary tale about what happens when the government interferes with the free market. It all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580 Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat futures at $8.10, down 9 for the day. September 8.18, down 12 and 3 quarters. And December futures, $8.42 and a quarter, down 12 and 3 quarters. Hard red winter wheat in Kansas City traded at the end of the day, 8 cents lower. A settlement price at $8.45 a bushel. July corn futures, $6.57, down 23. September, $6.63 and 3 quarters. Down 27 and a quarter, and December futures at $6.82 and a quarter, down 27 cents. March contracts, $7 and a quarter, 27, or rather 26 and a half lower. July soybean futures for the afternoon, $15.95, down 35 and a half. August at $15.82, down 33 and a half. And September beans, 37 cents lower at $15.68 and a half cents. November contract, $15.59, down 37 on the afternoon. July bean meal at $452, down $1.90. July bean oil at $63.63. 85 lower. August live cattle futures, $99.12, down $2.07. October down 217.5 at 106.40. August feeders at 110.17.5, $1.55 lower. September futures at $112.70 a hundredweight, down a dollar even. And July lean hogs at 74.80, 17.5 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the U of I. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. August crude oil futures are now trading 98 cents lower a barrel at $144.10. September at $145.80, 14 higher. Ethanol August contract for the afternoon, $2.07 and a quarter, rather $2.07 and 2 tenths, up 66 and a half cents. September futures, it's 268 and 6 tenths, down 3 and 7 tenths. Natural gas at 11.96 and 9 tenths, 6 and a half higher. September futures up 5 and a half at 12.04 and 7 tenths. And the heating oil for the day, that's diesel fuel, $4.06 and 9 tenths, down just about 7 tenths on the afternoon. September futures at 9 tenths lower, 4.10 and a tenth is the final or current trade there. Propane futures, August contract at $1.98 and 2 tenths, up 4 and 7 tenths on the afternoon. And July gold futures are trading at $972.70 an ounce now. That's $13.20 lower on the afternoon. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,040 is 60 points lower. And the U.S. dollar trading at 71.95 is down 0.14. The CRB index for the day, 2.47 lower at 458.96. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. Pretty short, in fact. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, it'll be partly to mostly sunny. So a slight chance for a few showers tomorrow, an isolated thunderstorm or two. Elsewhere, it'll be mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow across Illinois and Indiana between 85 and 90. Here's what the forecast for this evening looks like. Mostly clear. Lows between 58 and 64. A beautiful evening here in the Midwest. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL in Urbana, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On a Monday afternoon, time to take a look at the futures markets. We're joined today by Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Let's take a look at what happened in the marketplace for the afternoon. Futures started lower in the corn and the bean pits last night. Tell me what happened.
Well, probably several different things came together and just a lack of buying. When you look at the overall volume in the evening trade, it was decent, but not as what one would expected for a Sunday evening or that type of price move. But basically, the weather forecast was coming out somewhat cooperative, real no big weather threats, ideas that the crop conditions is going to show some improvement here on this afternoon's reporting were from 1 to 3%. Then the outside market's kind of iffy, too. When you look at returns on CDs, returns from the stock market, maybe we're starting to lose overall investor confidence, especially in the banking side of the equation. All of your institutionals took pretty big hits here over the short term and even today. But lastly, probably looking at the psychology of the market, we had the crop report out last Friday. That news is out. We've removed some of the uncertainty from the marketplace. And with the sort of the big run we've had here over the last few weeks, we're probably due to sort of back and fill here a little bit as the market looks for some short-term cycle lows here mid-month and maybe a little longer-term cycle lows here as we go towards the end of the month, Todd.
Can you tell us a bit more about the concerns over Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae and the U.S. dollar and how all that plays into the commodity markets?
Well, when you look at your larger players and you look at the funds in particular, they are along, you know, just about 600,000 contracts of corn, just shy of 250,000 contracts of beans, a long position. So they've got, you know, quite a bit invested in the grain side of the equation. But not these funds also have other investments in other sectors and. Some of these hedge funds have been beat up pretty bad in the mortgage side of the equation. There was talk there last Friday that one of the London hedge funds pulled out of the market there late last week, and that's sort of what pushed the market lower there late last week. So they're spread out, but when they take a heck of a hit in one area, they've got to, you know, print profit in the other or liquidate in the other. It just sort of fuels on itself. When you lose overall investor confidence, they just really don't want to be exposed to risk. Then plus two, they made some huge, huge returns. And so I think it's just the function of the overall uncertainty and the money they made in here just sort of standing to the sidelines here. I think it's going to take some type of event, either weather, hot, dry conditions, or we can see some type of renewed demand as far as maybe crude oil going sharply, sharply higher to get the trade excited again.
Would you be biased to the upside or the downside in the corn market at this time?
Well, it depends timing on it. I mean, it varies from hour to hour. But short term, I feel we got to play a little defense in here. Longer term, we don't have the crop in the bin yet. We still got a fairly decent demand base, even though demand's probably overestimated, and we're probably losing a little bit of demand. I think that, you know, shorter term, there's still, you know, some correction to go. Longer term, until we get through that August report and see what harvested acres is actually going to be put on that report and what actual yield's going to be on that report, we feel that breaks and errors probably going to find some support.
What are you telling your livestock producers at this time about the marketplace and what they should be doing? And in particular, I'd be interested to hear about the hogs.
On the hogs, we are using these August futures as a barometer, move back up into the 78-cent area. We're going to come in and do some hedge strategies here to sort of protect our downside. when you do the math on livestock production in general, it's just been a rough road here for a while. As far as actual cash grain side for feed use, such as meal and corn, we're going to use the weaker basis levels as we go into August and September to get some coverage at that time, because once we feel we get into early harvest and the end user starts coming buying, come forward and starts buying, that this basis is going to improve dramatically. And so we want to be ahead of the game here and make sure we got some feed needs booked as we go in the late summer ahead of the fall rush.
Anything else we need to cover before I let you go in the afternoon?
Oh, boy, it's just a dynamic market. Up, 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 down, down, down. And I don't think this type of volatility is going to go away anytime soon. So we invite all you listeners to give all the analysts a call here on WILL because everybody's got some good ideas. And I have a feeling if you don't have some type of plan, it could get kind of ugly.
Okay, thanks much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Grainfield, rather with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior grains analyst, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on a Monday afternoon. And he's one of 15 different analysts that you can hear on this program each and every week, the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can listen to any of those days you'd like to as a podcast or as an MP3 file right there on your computer. Just visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. In just a couple of moments, we'll take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, the RFA, the Renewable Fuels Association, was busy last week. It worked with biofuels groups from Canada, Brazil, and Europe to provide input to world leaders meeting at the past week's G8 meeting in Japan. RFA President Bob Dineen explains.
I thought the Group of Eight was, in fact, very constructive in their approach. They recognized that biofuels was having only a minor impact on food, and that the overall energy objectives are so critically important, and climate change objectives, and getting more biofuels into the marketplace. The fact of the matter is, the world's biofuels industry is providing significant liquid fuels to the marketplace that the International Energy Administration has said is the equivalent of a million barrels a day.
Dineen says the United States is working towards the goals outlined by the G8 of making biofuels production more sustainable and developing cellulosic ethanol, with grain-based ethanol paving the way for that second generation. Well, speaking of world negotiations, trade negotiating texts for the Doha round of global trade talks were released last week as well, and they're now being reviewed by the U.S. trade officials as well as other World Trade Organization member nations. The WTO has scheduled a ministerial meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, beginning July the 21st. That's next week. If an agreement is reached, WTO officials would like to finally conclude the Doha round that has been ongoing since 2001 and get a deal in place before the end of the year. From the international scene, we move a little closer to home. As the price of corn has gone up and the price of hogs has gone down, corn and pork producers have increasingly found themselves at odds. But both groups met in Indianapolis this past week and found a little common ground, trade. The National Corn Growers Association President Ron Litterer said both sides win when more pork goes to export.
We know in trade that we can ship meats a lot more economically than we can ship bulk corn. And so there's an advantage to the meat sector, for example. And we think the rural development aspects of growing those industries here in the U.S., and feeding the corn here really makes a lot of sense long term. So it's a win-win again for both our industries.
Still, according to Litterer, differences remain.
I think there's some differences of opinion on policy here. You know, the RFS, is the way we look at it, is a long-term strategy that we think is one that we don't want to throw out. I know that we're having some growing pains here in the short term, and I know that and I'm also a pork producer, so I know the numbers. I know there is an economic impact back on the pork industry, and I hope it's one that we can grow through and not to do anything that would disrupt the long-term energy policies that we think the RFS is going to help with. I think, again, if you look at the RFS right now, really, the RFS is not really driving the ethanol expansion. It's the market and the price of gasoline and crude oil that's driving it.
At the meeting, Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels said, "We believe growth in these two areas can coexist." He said the key is to find a crop other than corn with which to produce ethanol. And finally today, just a bit more on the export market. The Army Corps of Engineers opened the last of the closed locks on the Upper Mississippi River over the weekend, and barge traffic has resumed. However, the 3 weeks that the river was closed has backed up shipping on the river, and it could take some time for that traffic to get back to normal. Tom Torridi with Cooper Consolidated in St. Louis says it's hard to tell just how long, but he estimates it will be 30 to 45 days. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and WILL AM 580, public radio for the farming world. I'm your host, Todd Gleason, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to this ag programming, and you can sign up for our free weekend marketing newsletter. It's all at willag.org. Now, up next, the U.S. Congress is wrestling with the high price of crude oil. It's not the very first time that the legislative body has come under pressure to regulate a skyrocketing market. I'll have more on some lessons from the past. History is a very good teacher, and the U.S. Congress might consult its lessons, says an ag economist at the University of Illinois. Scott Irwin has just co-authored a research paper concluding speculative index funds are not having an undue impact on the agricultural futures markets. While doing his research, he happened across some lessons he thinks Congress should take to heart as it works to control the high price of crude oil.
It's as if, particularly in Washington, D.C., completely forgotten the similar episodes in the past and what we have learned from them. For example, in 1947, President Harry Truman issued an executive order raising grain futures margins temporarily to 33% because shortly after World War II, we saw grain futures prices skyrocketing for a variety of reasons. And the rhetoric, if you read the old literature from 1947 that President Truman, you could just fill in oil instead of grain, and it's almost exactly the same thing.
Irwin says much has been penned on the 1947 episode, and the lesson is pretty simple.
If you increase futures margins to artificially high levels, it will have very little or no impact on price levels, but you will really harm the efficiency of the futures markets in terms of allowing low-cost, easy transfer of price risks. So the danger here is that we'll really do some kind of very harmful policy.
Policy the U.S. Congress has already drafted and that Irwin thinks will harm the efficiency of the crude oil markets, but do very little to change the actual price of a barrel of oil. He suggests Congress take a closer look at who is leveling the complaints about the high price of oil rather than trying to control the marketplace.
If one wants to really understand what's the source of the complaints, usually you can find that they're associated with an industry that is short when prices are going up. Or in the inverse, when prices are dropping rapidly, the complaints will come from industry sources who have a natural long position in the market. And you can just trace that cycle. Again, go back as far as you want.
The historical lesson is twofold. First, track down who's complaining and why. Secondly, check to see if the speculative demand really outweighs the demands of the hedger. In other words, are the folks doing the complaining still buying the product despite the higher prices? For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It's a Monday afternoon, time to take a look at the cash grain market. Wyatt Muse of the Andersons joins us by phone today. Good afternoon to you, Wyatt.
Afternoon, Todd.
How are you today?
No complaints. Nice day.
Now, are there complaints, speaking of that, in the wheat market? You know, we've talked about convergence in the wheat market before and other markets, soybeans in particular. But this is the time now. We've gotten into harvest month, and the Chicago Board of Trade had updated the specs on this particular month, so they were hopeful that convergence would work better. I've heard that it hasn't. What's your view?
Well, last winter I attended the NGFA Country Elevator Conference, and the Chicago Board of Trade Mercantile has been examining this, and they actually determined that, yes, convergence is working. One thing that we really want to look at, though, is a lot of people treat December corn as the new crop and July wheat as the new crop. Well, in their example, and it is all on their website, by the way, you can see it at ngfa.org. Go back to December 07 and see the presentations. But determined that actually cash wheat basis did work its way up to zero by December. The problem is that people around here harvest their wheat in the summer and don't generally want to take up their on-farm bin storage to store their wheat when it's going to be competing with corn space come fall.
Why December, though? I mean, National Corn and Grain and Feed Association is pushing that, but why December contract? Does that have to do with December being the spring wheat harvest month?
Estimate is that it's the end of the year. November beans is the last trading month of the year, as is December, the end of the year. So if they start from January 1 and track it to December 31 on a calendar basis rather than a crop year basis, looks like the way they're trading it, because they're looking at multiple commodities, you know, both winter crops, spring crops. But as far as country basis goes, it should be historically wide. This year, there was a 52% increase in the number of acres planted of the soft red wheat, and the Chicago markets run up much higher than fundamentals would dictate over the last year, because that's a liquid market for speculators when actually you've got a surplus of the soft red wheat. One thing to take a look at, too, maybe shifting gears a little bit, is on the western crop. Spoke with an elevator operator out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, over the weekend, and he indicated to me that although the yield reports may be coming in as decent to good historically, the protein levels are actually down considerably. And he said the majority of producers are delivering their wheat right to the elevator off the combine and taking some discounts on it, but putting it in a bin is going to yield great returns if you've got decent protein levels in your wheat. So it's kind of an interesting situation now where the qualities are not really what we would like them to be. The weather was actually too good for them, because the stress is what causes the higher protein. So bit of a change from what we're looking at here, but interesting nonetheless.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn at the Andersons is 626, cash soybeans 1577, and cash wheat 683.
Thanks much.
Yes, thank you.
Wyatt Muse is with the Andersons, joins us on the Closing Mark Report on a Monday afternoon. We'll take a complete look at the ag weather in just 2 minutes. I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The Illinois House comes back to the Capitol tomorrow to try to restore some of the budget cuts made by Governor Rod Blagojevich, but the attempt faces long odds. House members will have to reach consensus on which cuts to restore, how to pay for them, and how to get the Senate to agree. Blagojevich cut the budget last week to balance it, stripping money for health care, education, social service programs, and public transit. The governor warned he'd have to make the cuts unless lawmakers passed revenue measures to come up with more money. They didn't. The House is due back in session tomorrow through Thursday. The Senate has no plans to return. A second $1 million grant will help the Illinois Fire Service Institute study the reasons why firefighters die in the line of duty. The new federal grant will narrow the study's focus to the leading cause of deaths of firefighters on the scene, cardiac problems. It'll let the University of Illinois agency expand the study to include firefighters who may have had heart-related issues.
They had been excluded from a current study on preventing slips and falls at fire scenes. Republican Congressman John Shimkus goes into the general election in November with a healthy campaign war chest. The 19th District Collinsville lawmaker has $1.5 million in his reelection fund as of July 1st, according to his latest federal report. The report for Democratic challenger Daniel Davis of Chatham wasn't yet available. In April, the little-known candidate's fund had just under $1,400 and debts of $4,400. Starting tonight, it's costlier to slip into a metered downtown Champaign parking space. The meters will now be monitored through 9 p.m. each weeknight. Before today, parking was free after 5 p.m. Parking Operations Supervisor Cheryl Johnson says it's part of the parking fee changes put in place to help pay for a new parking garage on Hill Street. She says it'll free up some badly needed street parking spaces and transfer more of the burden of funding downtown projects like street repair away from daytime business customers and more toward evening restaurant or bar patrons. You can also pay for up to 4 hours of parking at a time after 5 p.m. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
A beautiful day in the Midwest. Looks like it's going to be clear and cool this evening.
Yeah. Well, what we have is a high pressure over us at the surface, and that it's pressing rainfall, allowing for pretty normal temperatures for this time of year. At least across Illinois, you start heading out west and temperatures are a little bit above normal. Places such as Iowa climbing, and even far western Illinois, climbing to around 90 degrees. But overall, not that far off from normal for this time of year. And it looks like we're going to have kind of similar temperatures for the most part, although a little bit of slightly above normal temperatures coming up for the second half of the week. But nothing, again, nothing that anomalous or highly anomalous for this time of year.
We had some really big rains again over the past few days. Can you tell me about some of those? And I did hear, although I didn't go online to look at this, that the Wabash River managed to change its course, too.
Well, from a rainfall standpoint here, Todd, over the weekend, yes, yeah, some of the heaviest rainfall across the whole Midwest just happened to fall across areas of central and northern Illinois, and that extended into central Indiana as well. In fact, the highest totals in the whole Midwest, totals in excess of 4 inches, fell in that pocket kind of in and around Springfield over this past weekend. And so, again, it was a localized a situation with the heavy rainfall, which is, again, much different than, you know, what we saw earlier this summer here with the more widespread nature of the heaviest rain.
What can you tell us about the next 2 weeks in weather?
Well, for the next 7 days, we think the forecast is pretty cut and dry here, and the bottom line is that we do not see any extreme heat, at least for pollinating corn, across the Midwest here this upcoming week. And from a rainfall standpoint, looks like the bias of rainfall in general is across the northern sections of the Midwest, whereas the southern sections of the Midwest have a net drying here during this time frame. Now, as we look ahead towards the next week, there is debate out there. Actually, some computer model guidance is bringing more of that heat eastward from the Rockies and Plains into the Midwest. That is very debatable right now, and that's the thing that we're watching very closely. Obviously, if you do bring in that heat, that could begin to impact some of the corn here that is just starting to pollinate here in the nation's midsection. So that's what we're watching very, very closely as we go through this week.
All right. I checked the Wabash River online just to see what the Associated Press has to say. Here's what's happened there, and they're saying that the Wabash River changed course, and it's created a large island, something between 1,700 and 2,700 acres that were dry land and are now dry land islands. So farmers aren't going to be able to get to those without building a bridge of some sort. And I'll bet that one doesn't happen very soon. But that is the power of water, isn't it?
That certainly is amazing here. And, yeah, this is a classic example this year with the powers of Mother Nature, and certainly extreme is putting it lightly here from a rainfall standpoint, and, you know, covering many acres of farmland this year, and certainly a year to remember, that's for sure.
Okay, Mark, thanks much.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo's checks with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago. That is today's Closing Market Report. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.